This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Helen Farmer with you on today's episode of Afternoons. We were talking about a career break and ultimately some of the companies that are trying to bring back women into the workplace with a bit more flexibility. We were speaking to the CEO of the British Chamber of Commerce here in the UAE and a career coach as well. Really essential listening for businesses and, of course, individuals too. We were discussing the power of taking accountability for where you are in your life with Corey from Mentality. It was Investment 101 with Grace Marabi. And in our psychology hour, Dr. Thuraya on hand as we talked about popcorn brain and ultimately how our attention spans are getting shorter. So last week we had such a busy show and a really important show as we talked about part-time work and in total brutal honesty, because I am really tired today, the total disappointing lack of it here in the UAE, despite 2 years ago it becoming, well, legally possible. Big excitement from lots of company about bringing on especially more women part-time, but it's all fizzled out a bit. So we want to do a bit of a deep dive into hiring women after career break in particular. And we'd love to hear from you if this is something you've done. If you are a company that offers this, we'd love to give you a shout out. And of course, if you need any advice, we are on hand until three. Having a bit of a round table today, Katie Holmes is with us, the CEO of the British Chamber of Commerce. Big advocate for hiring women after returning to work after. I'm going to be really careful because I keep on saying break. It's not a break having a baby. But let's say a career break. And we've got Rowan Athram with us as well from Beyond Careers. She coaches women to help them successfully find employment, but also really understand what they want from work, and a big advocate for flexible work and well-being as well. Rowan, can we start with you?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
My absolute pleasure. I wanted to ask you about this kind of the mindset, the shift that a lot of women experience after having a baby. And you've got a little boy yourself. Mm-hmm. So can I ask you a little bit about some of the challenges that women are coming to you with?
Of course. It's a very good question. Thank you, Helen. So I think it's sort of a twofold consideration here. And on the one hand, you know, of course, there's an identity conflict at times, especially depends on, you know, where or, you know, at what point in your life you've had children. And for me, I'm the mother of a 16-month-old boy. And, you know, having been in the workforce for quite a while, 18 years of experience, you know, on the corporate side, I knew that the transition is imminent. And I felt that, you know, I was very cognizant of the challenges that are available to women in terms of the perception of, you know, women coming and returning back to the workforce, the expectations I have of myself, to be a good mother, to be present. And all of these moving parts tends to create the amalgamation of what we see today, you know, where mothers are struggling to find that balance and really find that identity fit, you know, between and balance between career and raising a family. And so a lot of the times, I think the questions that I tend to get asked is, well, what's next? You know, I've had a break of X number of years. You know, what would the advice be? I have no skills. To which I say, no skills? Any, you know, I mean, would you not say coordinating, you know, the things that we do on the day-to-day, managing.
Oh, my gosh.
Project management hat.
Negotiation.
I mean, you name it.
Finding things. Too right. But I think it's very common for women to downplay this time as being kind of redundant from the workforce, not understanding the skills you have actually acquired. Katie, you are with us today. You are CEO of the British Chamber of Commerce. And I wanted to ask you about, you know, you are an advocate for hiring women after a break. And I wondered if we could be really basic, break it down. What are some of the big benefits to companies for employing women in particular at this time and stage of their lives?
If I could just start by just sharing a little bit about my story, because that's where I'm a huge empath for anybody in the same situation. So we moved over here 12 years ago for my husband's job. So I was I had a one-year-old and I was pregnant with our second. So my primary focus was, I'd never been to Dubai before either. So I was setting up a network and trying to, you know, make it work, really.
Find a doctor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was quite tricky. So, those first few years were a bit of a blur, but equally I wouldn't have it any other way. I loved having that focus time raising my daughters. There was a point where when they started going to school that I really wanted to do something. Its purpose is really important. They call it trailing spouses.
It's a horrible
term. It's actually trailing talent. It's the best way to look at it. And that's how organizations should see it. I was working in Canary Wharf for years. Before that, I was working in the government, had a lot of experience, but then I took basically 6 years off, in inverted commas.
How did you feel about yourself during that time, if you don't mind me asking? Because we're talking there about this idea of being really successful in your job and actually going to work and being able to perform to a high standard and knowing I am here and doing something I'm great at. And then you have kids, you're like, God, I don't feel like I am good at this because no one's really taught me how to do it.
Yeah.
And then you do get good at it, you know, kids change their ways and you're like, okay, I'm actually rubbish again. But how did your kind of identity piece work over that time period and those transitions, Katie?
Yeah, so I was very focused on my career and actually thought I was negotiating my maternity down to the minimal. I didn't think I'd stay off as long as I did. As soon as my daughter was born, I just kept thinking, how can I stay with her? So my whole perception changed. And I always think that when I speak to people that are about to go on maternity leave, so just don't make any rash decisions because you never know how you're going to feel. Mm-hmm. And as I say, I loved being that full-time stay-at-home mum for a period of time. But then there is a point where your identity is, you know, as Rowan said, it's really critical. And there was a calling, but it was impossible to find something. I did a bit of freelance and then I actually ended up in the charity sector. And I was a classroom assistant at the School for the Determined by Mall of Emirates. So I loved doing that. And then through chance, really, I connected with the British Business Group, as it was then. And I was tempted back as a consultant to look at their marketing strategy. And the rest is history.
Well, I think it's really important to get context around, you know, the people in the room today. So thank you both for sharing your stories. And we've got quite a lot of questions and messages to be getting to. So that's what we're going to come to next. We're going to tell the companies why this is so important. Kate's using the words that kind of trailing talent there, but this massive untapped resource of women who really want to be in the workplace, but there's that missing piece, that flexibility, the companies that maybe haven't got their eyes open to it. Joining us in studio, not one but two experts, as we talk about career breaks, going back to work, career crossroads for women in particular. Katie Holmes is with us, the CEO of the British Chamber of Commerce here in Dubai. And Rowan Astrom of Beyond Careers. She's a coach who works with women in particular, establishing what they want and successfully finding them employment. And I think it's really important to say mums as well, because, you know, it's got to come from that personal experience. Katie, you were speaking there before about your own career break and how you've come to get to where you are now. And working through those identity pieces that can be really, really confusing as new mums, especially in a new country. Can we have a bit of a shout out to some companies that are really understanding this, you know, this untapped talent? And actually, we've had a message from Brett first saying, "Hi, Helen, great lineup today. I run a company, the Engage Group. Large part of our team are comprised of women who have taken career breaks for family and come back to work. We have been spoilt with the wonderful talent and very driven people. If anything, a career break often brings with it a fresh perspective and revived energy. In return, we offer flexible work hours and an understanding around family commitments. It's been a win-win situation all round." That's Brett from the Engage Group, which I think is engagegroup.me, if I found it right. I think Brett's...
Really
summarised beautifully some of the benefits to companies for looking at this this demographic in particular. But, you know, from some of the companies that are part of your group and indeed, you know, anecdotally, what are some of the big pluses for engaging and employing women after a career break?
Absolutely. So we're a membership organisation and 60% of our members are owner-managed businesses. So that's somebody that's a founder running the show. There is this whole situation at the moment where, you know, the expression lonely at the top. So you've got founders that have really built their businesses from scratch and they are not necessarily, they can't offer amazing salaries, but they're also in deep need in terms of, you know, driving the Dubai economy from a supply chain perspective, senior counsel. So I'm aware of ex-Magic Circle lawyers as teaching assistants in schools because they can't find the hours that work for them. Mm-hmm. So if a founder of a company like Brett, I'm assuming it's his company, if he's thinking, right, if I could have somebody that has that experience, and even if it's 3 hours for three mornings, that senior counsel would be fantastic. So my advice would be if somebody, even if you have been out of the job market for 10 plus years, that experience that you would have had, no matter what it is, yes, schools are benefiting. There's lots of classroom assistants that are highly qualified. I don't want to take that away from the education system. But I would be looking at the 60% of the companies here that are desperate for senior counsel. And quite often it's a case of, this is definitely how Gen Zs are, is they look at not how do I fit in, but how can I help? Mm-hmm. So if you were to see a company, and it kind of, it's empowering as well to think, I'd really love to work for that company. Like, you know, Brett's talking about his organization straight away. It's like, oh, I'd love to work there. But there's so many other companies like that. So we have in our organization, I could give a shout out to Drink Dry. So Erica, who's the founder, will always look at a working parent, not just male, not just female, male and female, because she knows that she's going to get really, really conscientious person working extremely hard.
This is how I felt when I went back to work after having my first. I was like, I'm pretty good at prioritizing stuff now, because with respect to my then employers, I don't want to be here after 5 o'clock. Like, I want to get stuff done and get home to my baby. It made me a whole lot more focused, a lot more productive.
Yes.
And you have more context. You have more context about what's important, what's worthy of your time, and just a lot more efficient, to be honest. So, and it's a great company. You know, Erica and the team are absolutely fantastic there. You know, if you want something done, ask a busy woman.
Yeah.
Or man. Shout out to all the working parents. I think some of it can be this idea of feeling confused, I think, and we've had a number of messages for you, Rowan, as well, about, what to do, career crossroads. So we're going to come to those after 5:30. Any other companies you want to give a shout out to, Katie, or indeed any industry that perhaps lend themselves well to this idea?
Definitely. So there's a new company that's joined us recently called Rayne, R-A-Y-N-E, and they're a fractional recruitment company. So they have short-term placements, and they specialise in legal, financial, and accounting, I believe. So they would be a great one to look at. Also, the Brill Collective. So it's a, Amy is ex-Saatchi & Saatchi, and she has created an ecosystem of women in the marketing, communications, advertising, and PR. And she's fantastic. So I would definitely give her a follow. And quite often that's predominantly a female sector as well. So they're all looking at placing on a short-term basis. But that's also how I started. I started on a short-term basis. 5 years later,
here I am. Is there a portal at the minute for people to be able to go and find, you know, companies that are open to either job shares or more flexibility or more part-time roles, do you think, Katie?
It's called LinkedIn.
That's it.
And if I may, Beyond Careers is aiming to do just that.
Are you really?
Yes. Well, so Beyond Careers, if I can sort of jump in here, was born on the back of, you know, when I was pregnant, being, again, really cognizant of the challenges and really wanting to do something because, you know, there's plenty of anecdotal evidence through, you know, mums networks and groups that I'm sure, you know, we've crossed paths on. And we know, we understand the challenges, we hear it, you know, and at the same time, what we're lacking is data to sort of back it up. There's fantastic amount of data available globally, speaking to women in the workforce. There isn't very much around motherhood and what that means. And the motherhood penalty, if you will, is pretty real. And this is, again, evidenced by conversations that, you know, one has on the coaching front, where you realize that there's challenges where women are experiencing imposter syndrome. They are, lacking for suitable opportunities. So what we really want to do is invite companies who have that sort of ethical, conscious, conscientious approach in terms, again, integrated. And it's where there's tangible policies and actions behind what they're doing. And it's not, again, you know, I know a few of us have this love-hate relationship with International Women's Day because to some extent...
I really do.
It's becoming a bit of a marketing piece. And I mean that with all due respect. What we want to do is really showcase authentic actions that companies are taking. And, you know, this, again, has a knock-on effect on the company's corporate reputation.
It really does, because that, you know, you're going to get people staying there. We know how expensive it is to recruit. Mm. And if you're able to attract great talent and keep them all the way through, you know, offboarding to have a baby, onboarding afterwards, my goodness, you know, you get to build that really, really strong team. And then you bring in perspective of parents as well. We were talking just last week about the parent-friendly label. So if you missed that show, check it out on the podcast, but also Google parent-friendly label UAE. I believe there are 17 companies that have had this certification right here, which is talking about exactly that, shared parental leave, coaching, nurses' rooms. You know, like there is so much that can be done. And just because the labour law says one thing doesn't mean you can't do better. We're going to continue this conversation. We are going to go to the text line. So if you do have any questions or indeed recommendations around career breaks, we've had questions about how do you phrase it on a CV and cover letter. Rowan, a great one for you. We've also had a message from Vicky, who's found herself now 42, needing a bit of advice about those next steps. Joining us in studio is career coach Rowan Astrom from Beyond Careers. We're going to be availing of some of her advice because I've had a lot of messages on the topic of returning to work after a break. I don't mean break like a holiday, because when we know when you've had a baby and you're raising kids, it is far from a break. And Katie Holmes with us today, the CEO of the British Chamber of Commerce, who's been highlighting some of the members in that group that is, you know, really dedicated to not just, you know, thinking about part-time and job share, but, you know, really having these conversations. And I think it's really important. We're talking about women in particular, Katie, but it's not just about new mums where flexible policies can really be beneficial. What else have you seen, and how else can companies do better for all of their employees?
So there's a really lovely theory. It's called the drop curb theory. And in California, they spent a fortune on lowering the curb to allow for wheelchair users in crossing the road. And when they actually worked out, they were looking how much money they spent, and like, gosh, that was so much. But then they worked out that the drop curb then allowed those with buggies, those with suitcases, those on their bikes, joggers. And I think the return to worker conversation is something, yes, it's looking at women going into the workplace, but the more that we can push for flexible working and bringing your whole self to work, because it's not work life, it is life. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what, you know, we're all on. So I had a business briefing this morning with the Chamber, and it was with Cigna Healthcare report, the Vitality report, talking about the majority of people answering across the globe are this always on culture. So it's not good. It's not good for your stress. It's not good for people at home around you either. So I'll give you an example at the Chamber. So we have working parents, but we also have people that are working that don't have children, but have their own life ambitions and goals. So last year we hired an amazing events coordinator called Corey. So he came into the team, and his ambition was to learn to drive. But because he worked in hospitality, it was impossible for him to go, and it was really expensive as well to go in and out of the hours. Mm-hmm. So one of the things was giving him the flexibility to be able to learn to drive in, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning or different times. Delighted to say he passed.
Yay.
So that's it. So the more that you can allow for letting people be themselves and giving them the flexibility, then everybody should be. It's a culture thing.
It is. It's a humanity thing. It really is. We're talking about going back to work and returnships now, and actually joining us from Australia, of all places, we've got Beck Roberts, who's a talent lead for inclusion, diversity and belonging. And Beck, we've had you on the show before, and I thought of you today, this idea of returnships, because you do it for not just immediately after having a baby, but actually all sorts of different life stages and ages. And I wondered if you wouldn't mind briefly explaining to us the concept of returnships and how it works with you guys at Jacobs.
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Helen. It was lovely to hear from you. We had such a wonderful time in conversation last time around. So it's great to be back. I'd just love to add, before I touch on the returnships, I think it's such an important conversation to have about mainstreaming flexibility, which we just touched on. And by mainstreaming flexibility, which is a real focus for us here at Jacobs globally, it's about everybody being able to, you know, to construct a flexible work schedule that works for them and works for their personal arrangements and their personal lives, whatever that may be. So, yeah, I think it's a really great conversation to have. So last time we spoke to you, Helen, we were only halfway through the pilot program, our internship program, which we had launched globally for the first time for Jacobs in Dubai. And it was an absolute roaring success. So I suppose to take a step back, though, in 2019, we made a global and public commitment for our aspirational goal for gender representation of 40-40-20, so 40% female representation, 40% male representation, and 20% other, which can include non-binary, but can also then be to the construct of a workforce in a particular location. We have made fantastic progress, particularly at board level, executive leadership teams, and also around the globe in our early careers, so the graduate, or we call them our global future talent programs. But like most industries and organisations, it's that mid-career level professional where there is persistent disproportionate representation of men versus women. Mm-hmm. Globally, regardless of your geographic location, your belief system, your family structure or construct, it is predominantly women who take a career break, with the vast majority of this due to caring responsibilities. Now, whether that be as a parent or what we are seeing more and more globally, you know, with extended family care, multi-generational families. Absolutely. And again, it being the women that that bear that role. So we looked at returnships as a fantastic opportunity to connect with that mid-level career professional. And it isn't a program that is only available to women. So I will say now that we have launched across, we started in Dubai, we've launched in India, we are about to launch in Singapore, Malaysia and Hong Kong. We've launched in the UK, we've also launched across the Americas. Wow. Soon to travel to the Australia New Zealand region also. We've had very few applications from men. We have had a number of male program participants, but the vast majority have been women.
I think what this really speaks to is that it's such a choice to tune into this and to make put policies in place and really turn towards these talent pools. Are you able to give us just quickly some of the highlights so far and how it's going for those women part of that returnship program, Bex?
Absolutely. So our pilot program in Dubai, which is probably the most relevant to speak to, we started with, but we welcomed 19 program participants, and our returnship program is a structured 16-week program to refresh skills, so from a technical and craft-based perspective, to importantly rebuild confidence, which is usually the biggest obstacle for women who are looking to return to careers after an extended career break, and reignite careers. And it's exactly what we have seen. Pleasingly, all 9 program participants are now permanent employees of Jacobs and absolutely thriving. And I know it's been quite the conversation over the last week on the show about the part-time work opportunities or the lack thereof. Susan Knight, she probably won't be listening because no doubt she's extremely busy, was one of our program participants, and she actually joined via a part-time flexible work schedule throughout the program and has continued on with that because it works for she and for her family, but has continued to succeed and thrive in her role and is seen as a very highly regarded member of our team.
Thank you so much. As I said, I think it's really important to be hearing about, as we're talking about, you know, smaller businesses here, but also big internationals really understanding. So the update is fantastic to hear, and all the very best to you in Australia. And of course,
thank you.
Everyone here as part of that returnship here in Dubai. Bec Roberts, Talent Lead of Inclusion, Diversity and Belonging at Jacobs. Having a bit of a round table today, Katie Holmes, CEO of the British Chamber of Commerce in the studio, and Rowan Astrom of Beyond Careers on hand. I wanted to play this message out that we got from Vicky, and it's her birthday.
Hi, Helen. Having just come off a really successful, amazing event working on COP28, I have a number of different ideas of where I'd like to take my career, and I'm trying to understand what's the best way of laying out the options and not kind of like a pros and cons list, but trying to understand where to take my career next. I'm 42 today and kind of feel like I'm sitting in a point where I'm trying to figure out what to do with my life, and I never thought I would be 42 and trying to figure that out. So it's a little bit unnerving and scary. So any advice and guidance would be incredible. Thank you.
Rowan, are you able to give us a quick rundown of the questions that Vicky can be asking herself and indeed people in a similar boat out there?
Sure, happy to. First of all, happy birthday, Vicky. What a great time to reflect on what's been happening in your life, and also kudos on, you know, your contribution to COP28. That is an achievement in and of itself. And I think one of the things, just coming back to questions and way forward, sometimes we forget to give ourselves credit for jobs well done, and we underestimate just what exactly we're capable of doing as a result. So as a result, I would probably say a good starting point is to ask yourself, you know, what really lights your fire? What do you enjoy doing? Did you enjoy your work or your role at COP28? Which specific parts? How does that feel in your body? How does that sit? Mm-hmm. It's also interesting to reflect on, and you could journal some of this if you want. And it goes beyond a pros and cons list. It's more of a, what do you want to continue doing? What do you want to stop doing? What do you want to do more of?
With your permission, can I connect you guys offline so you can explore this further?
Of course.
Because this is obviously your big passion in terms, and we are going to have a bigger career coaching session for anyone that does need a bit of help, and we can do a deeper dive into that. Lastly, for anyone else that's looking to connect with, you know, with companies who are more open-minded, more flexible, how does it work with you, Katie, and the membership program there?
We have 70 events a year. They range from all sorts of subjects, but there's lots of open-ended networking. So come and meet the very dynamic business owners that are just ready to meet people that can help their business.
It's been wonderful to have this conversation continuing, and we will, of course, we've got lots more to say. Just the beginning here on Dubai Eye 103.8. Talking about where you are in life and taking accountability now, Corey Lindsay is on a bit of a mission to provoke positive change in people through his platforms. Born and raised in South London, he's now here in Dubai. He's part of Mentality with co-founder Manage Giorno, basically inspiring people to become better versions of themselves and question some of the societal constructs that you might have never questioned before. Corey, great to be in touch. How are you?
I'm very well, Helen. How are you?
Yeah, really good. I find this topic really, really fascinating. And before we get on to why you wanted to have a bit of a deep dive into taking accountability for our actions and where we are in life, I wanted to ask you a bit of a personal question, I guess, which is, what inspired you to become an advocate for men's mental health? I mentioned your mission there, but is there more to it on a personal basis, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I suppose my advocation for men's mental health and just all things that pertain to men firstly stems from my inherent male experience, right? So I look at the world inherently through the male gaze, and really seeing a lot of men struggling with various different issues. I think growing up, we always look at the male figures in society, the male archetype, as strong, impervious. And then as we adult, we realize that that's not necessarily the truth, and we get a look or a peek behind the veil, which is masculinity and manhood. And yeah, I just feel like I can lend my voice and lend our platform to such a cause.
Well, I'm really grateful for your time and your insights today. And I heard a really, you know, men's mental health in terms of being in crisis about the loneliness crisis in particular, you know, lack of social connection, and unfortunately, you know, rising suicide rates, especially out of the UK right now, and that young male group, and often being pointed to this, I am not where I thought I would be in life. You know, this point of comparison, whether it's where you thought you would be because of those of expectations you put on yourself, but also comparison amongst your peers, and of course, social media and celebrities as well. So I wanted to ask you about this concept, about being accountable for where you are in life. It's a really transformative mindset. How do you define it? Why are you interested in it? You know, particularly concerning men.
Well, I think accountability is the greatest form of self-love. Generally speaking, it's being personally responsible for where your station is in life. And that includes things you have done, your actions, your general thought trajectory, as well as things that don't necessarily pertain to your own actions. If you've been born into a certain class, or if you've been sort of certain ailments, I believe you should still be accountable for those things, because accountability leads to solution orientation. From solution orientation, you can, you know, deploy your own agency in your life to make things better.
And that doesn't really need to be about, you know, measuring and being super kind of, you know, quantitative about these things, but taking stock, I guess, recognizing self-reflection. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. Introspection, looking at oneself objectively, away from your subjective viewpoint, right? Because we all have an idea of ourselves. So that may look like arcs and friends, arcs and close relatives to you. Where do some of my flaws and deficits lie? Mm-hmm. And regarding you have that cohort of good counsel around you, you should be able to navigate the introspective journey fairly well.
But where and why do some people struggle with holding themselves accountable?
It's because victimhood is an addictive feeling, isn't it, right? It absorbs you of the station in life. And the funny thing and the dichotomy with that is that if you ever was to achieve something and have, you know, a valiant experience, we would take full accountability for that, but absolve ourselves of all of the shortcomings in our life. So I think that's where people find it difficult to hold themselves accountable because, you know, victimhood is addictive. It's addictive to be a victim sometimes.
Corey Lindsay with us today from Mentality. Up next, maybe some practical strategies or tools that men in particular can use for taking ownership over their lives as well. And that sense of responsibility. If you've got any questions about this, if you feel like you have got stuck in that victim mindset, do reach out. Corey having a big deep dive on this with his co-founder, Manny, on the topic of this. Mentality is where you need to go. Fantastic platform for men, for mental health, for really the sense of connections. Talking men's mental health, and in particular, being accountable for your actions and where you are in life with Corey Lindsay. He is the co-founder of Mentality, fantastic platform inspiring people to become better versions of themselves and ultimately connecting men in the community as well. You mentioned this idea of a victim mindset and how that can stop people from making themselves accountable. And you said, you know, whether you're born into certain circumstances, you mentioned class. How can people get out of what can be a really destructive, toxic mindset?
Well, firstly, understanding that you have full agency over your life. In particular, if this broadcast is reaching you now, you probably have the facilities and the resources around you, the access to information that can help you to move in the trajectory of life you want to see. So I think it first starts with understanding that you can affect change and then figuring out what change you want to affect and then deploying your ingenuity and your industrious nature to make that a reality.
What about getting someone else's take? You mentioned earlier about, you know, the power of self-reflection and introspection. And to actually make time to do that can be really hard. But also knowing how to ask yourself the right questions and, you know, really carving out as a priority. Where can either, you know, professional mental health expert or indeed the power of a community help to help you recognise your strengths, where things might not have gone right, and how you can go forward? Can we talk power of people?
Yeah, well, certainly. You need to have a good community around you. You need wise counsel. You need a strong cohort. And I think that's the beginning of any sort of change, because you can only reinforce change to a certain degree, especially in most cases, the station where you're residing, you may not be aware of it. Mm-hmm. So taking stock of the opinions of other people is important. However, we need to make sure that you have a discerning eye to make sure that you have the right people around you in the first place.
Mm-hmm. When we're thinking about Dubai and some of the challenges in particular that, you know, are coming to you, whether it's through comments on, you know, on the podcast and, you know, on the videos you're posting as well, where do you feel like the big pain points are for men, mental health, and where they're at in life right now? What are you hearing?
I think it generally pertains to two veins. The first is finance and the second is women.
Go on. Which one do you want to tackle first?
Well, I suppose women is slightly more pertinent, just because naturally everything has a biological underpinning, and mm-hmm. we want to procreate, we want to create life, we want to perpetuate our seed. And that's a big reason why men do a lot of what they do. But men are struggling nowadays, and we can put that down to a myriad of things, expectations, how the dating market and social media has kind of globalized, and all of these other things that are occurring. But men are most certainly struggling in that regard.
Okay. Can I ask Corey Lindsay for his one tip for men who might be struggling with women?
One tip. If I was to put it in a succinct way, I would say just focus, don't focus on the things you cannot control and make the best with what you have already. So to be more specific, there's this kind of general idea around a man's height. Well, that's something you can't control. You cannot control your height. Regarding you're over 25 years old, that's probably not going to change. Mm-hmm. So don't focus on those things and become all doom and gloom about it. But what things can you control? Could I possibly get in better shape? Could I possibly procure more resource? Could I possibly become more educated and more learned, work on my diction, learn multiple languages, and just become a person who's attractive in general? Mm-hmm. And that through just developing your life, living life, and becoming a person of interest through your own life convictions and volitions.
I love that. This idea of being a life force, like being vital in the world and, you know, choosing to, you know, educate yourself, improve yourself. And I guess finances can be, especially right now, cost of living, you know, particularly difficult. But what role do you think finance has on men's mental health right now?
Well, finance allows you access to a certain degree, isn't it? Right. Mm. There's oftentimes a paywall, especially as it pertains to, you know, let's say you want to court a woman, you want to take her out on dates. And if you ascribe to, you know, the typical tenets of masculinity and manhood, which is, you know, you're gonna bear the financial burden, that's obviously gonna cost you, right? So you need to get yourself to a place where you can support yourself economically to allow you to go out and, you know, potentially find the love of your life, etc. So yeah, finance is very important. It's what we need for everything, right? So I definitely focus on that.
I struggle with that. I really do, because I've seen a few kind of so-called dating gurus talking about, like, I won't date a guy who earns less than this, and this is why men should pay because I'm paying this for them. I'm like, I really worry about that in terms of being a barrier to making real connections. I don't accept a coffee on a first date. Shouldn't go for a walk on a first date. He should be paying X, Y, Z. I find it really revolting, to be honest. And I wondered if you had any advice for men who, you know, want to meet. This is a topic for another day, Corey. We're going to run out of time. But for men who are thinking that, you know, finance is a genuine barrier for them meeting someone who is really wholehearted and, you know, wonderful, how can they get out of that headspace?
Well, I think there's this over-leveraged idea that women looking for men with money, it's more so what that money represents. The,
interesting.
You know, the discipline, the delayed gratification, the ability to be industrious. It's all of those qualities. So regarding you have those things, that's still going to galvanize women towards you. So if you only have money and you don't have any of those things, then in essence, your dating life is going to be very transactional. Whereas if you have those things and maybe devoid of money for the time being, you'll still be able to attract loads and loads of connections. Mm-hmm. But it can seem quite transactional, and that can scare a lot of people. But you should want economic prosperity for yourself, first of all.
Yeah. And then, you know, and this idea of a growth mindset, I think, is really, really important. That, you know, I can't do that now, but I might be able, I can't do that yet. I'm not doing this, but I can earn that in the future. I think that self-defeating idea is really, really important, and really comes back to this idea of being accountable for where you are in your life and your life stage. We have really just scratched the surface on this, and I know you guys at Mentality Podcast have big deep dives into this topic and more. Corey, for anyone who wants to connect with you, whether it is with Mentality or indeed, you know, the personal training you're doing, what's the best way of getting in touch with you?
Well, they can get in touch with us via our Mentality Instagram. I'd say that's probably the best place to find us and myself in particular, which is men_talitypodcast on Instagram. And we actually have an Instagram live this evening at 9:30 p.m. where we'll be doing a deep dive in the topic of accountability.
Amazing. You're a superstar. Thank you so, so much. Really appreciate it. Can we talk about dating on a future show?
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'd be more than happy.
Love it. You're a superstar. Really appreciate it. Cheers, Corey.
This is Money Matters with National Bonds. Save, invest, prosper.
It is Money Matters, and fantastic to be talking about investing 101 with Grace Marabi, bringing a wealth of experience, strategy, operations, project management. She's managing partner of LMG Management Consultants, Emirati and British consulting company right here in Dubai. She was voted 2021 Entrepreneur of the Year and at the Black Excellence Awards, and it's an honour to meet you. Are you ready for a really silly question, Grace?
I'm fine, and there's no silly question. And there's no silly question.
What is investing?
Investment in layman terms is basically taking money to invest in an asset. for economic gain. So basically, you are investing, it can be real estate, it could be stocks, it could be bonds, it could be crypto, but you're putting money into an asset so that you get a gain, a financial gain.
And this financial gain could be something that happens an hour later, or it could be something that happens 50 years
exactly.
down the line.
Exactly. I mean, I guess you could also look at it. It'd be tricky to think of an investment as I went to the slot machine, put in a dollar and I got, but that's exactly what it literally is. But that's more to do with luck and not being strategic about it.
And you are strategic.
Yes.
What do you think is the barrier to a lot of people investing?
I think it's the mindset. So a lot of people think that investment has to be in the millions. Mm. So immediately they take themselves out of it. I don't have a million dirhams, so I can't do anything. I don't have 100,000 dirhams, so I can't do anything. But you could even invest 1,000 dirhams. That's also a form of investment. It could be in investing in, let's say, a class or a program where you know that once you finish this course, I pay 2,000 dirhams for it. I will have this certification and I can now make this amount of money. So that's another type of investment.
That's a really interesting mindset as well. I was just listening to a podcast with Dan Priestley, who's an entrepreneur himself. And one of the questions to him was, if you had $100 every month, how would you invest it to ultimately make money long term? And he said, exactly that. Invest it in yourself. You know, if you feel like you can't close a deal, take a course in it. If you're not a good public speaker, educate yourself on that.
Yeah.
Or spend that $100 taking someone out for dinner who could be a really good connection
mentor.
Yes. Or a mentor. Exactly. So when we think about common types of investments, can we kind of break them down a little bit? Would that be okay?
Yes, we can. So the, you know, and now let's in Dubai, everybody is doing real estate. You were renting an apartment and you decided the market is good, so I'm going to buy real estate. So that's a popular one here. But you also have stocks, and stocks can also be done at any age. There shouldn't be a barrier that says if I have to be old to do stocks. You can learn about the stocks. Now everything is on YouTube. There's stuff everywhere. You don't have to necessarily use a stockbroker.
Mm-hmm.
Bonds, mutual funds. There's crypto. There's just so many different ways.
Do you have any crypto in your investment portfolio,
no,
Grace?
No, I don't.
No, I don't either.
Because I'm over 40 and I like to touch it.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, I guess, about risk tolerance.
Yes.
You know, if you are working on a platform and it's basically any kind of, you know, automated robo investment,
yes,
you can input your appetite for
yes.
risk. How would you define your appetite for risk?
I have a high appetite for risk. I've been an entrepreneur for the past 15 years. So, I mean, just starting any business means you have some appetite for risk. But I think on another note in regard to that is when you are thinking about what kind of investment to do, you have to make an honest assessment with yourself about your appetite for risk.
Mm-hmm.
Do I need the money back today or do I need the money back in 3 years?
And that must be interesting in couples as well. You know, if one partner has a high appetite and the other one has a low.
Yeah.
We're going to talk next about kind of diversifying investment opportunities. And we've had a question saying, if you had 50,000 dirhams today, how would you invest it? Good question. Grace Marabi in the studio, managing partner of LMG Management Consultants.
This is Money Matters with National Bonds. Save, invest, prosper.
Talking investment 101 now and answering my questions and yours, we've got Grace Marabi bringing a wealth of experience in strategy, operations, project management. She's been voted Entrepreneur of the Year. She's also the founder of Amofra Africa, NGO focused on helping children and family affected by pediatric cancer in Ghana. We're talking about investing from everything from investing in yourself to investing funds, long-term and indeed short-term, about risk tolerance. How important is it to have financial goals when it comes to your investments in terms of keeping you focused and, I guess, even picking the right investments from the outset, Grace?
I think it's very important to have both long and short-term goals. A definition of a short-term goal would be, okay, I want to take this cruise in September. So you start saving a certain amount each month. And then you have your long-term financial goals. I want to buy a house. I want to save for my retirement. And I think keeping those goals very present and aligned with your everyday living is how to reach those goals. They can't be just in the air. You have to attach certain deliverables to it.
actions to it as well. We discussed budgeting last week, but I'd like to get your take on how you feel about the word budgeting, or indeed living within your means. Any advice there?
I think it's very smart to, I'm very aware of the need to live within your means. And I think sometimes people take that to be stingy. Let's correct that. Living within your means, meaning knowing what's coming in and knowing how much is going out. Mm-hmm. That's it. So if you can go to 10 restaurants a month, fine, do that. But if going to 10 restaurants a month is costing you to default on X, Y, and Z, then you're not living within your means.
And also, if going to 10 restaurants a month means that you're not able to save X number of, you know, 100 or 1,000 dirhams to invest long-term in your future, then that's not living aligned with your long-term goals as well.
Exactly.
We had a message asking, if your guest was given 50,000 dirhams cash to invest, what would she do?
Okay, so the person would have to ask themselves when they want this return. If you want the return immediately, then I would probably say do some kind of very high-risk stocks or some sort. If you're willing to wait it out, I would say you could actually find a existing business that needs a little bit of cash flow. And then you would put that 50,000 with an existing business and they could pay you something monthly for maybe over the course of 2 years or 1 year or something like that.
How do you, and I think business investment is a really good, we're going to run out of time on it today, but a really interesting concept, because how on earth do you begin to identify companies that might want to maybe retire or exit, or maybe they do need cash flow in order to digitize or innovate to earn more?
Yeah.
Are there any kind of networks, companies that you tend to work with or recommend in that space?
It comes by probably word of mouth, and you do have to vet the individuals because there are scams involving this. Mm-hmm. But it's doing a little bit of research. If someone says, I have a salon and I need 100,000 to add maybe this application or this service and we would make X amount more money, have you seen the salon? Is it an existing structure? So there's some due diligence that people can do on their own. In addition to asking for, can I see your financials? So that would be the next step of engagement. But also Facebook, people ask a lot in the Dubai groups. People ask, I need a partner. So it's out there.
Speaking of Facebook, I guess that kind of brings me to my last question, which is about resources and choosing to educate yourself on this. I think it's really, really easy. And we are going to be talking about women in finance on a later show. To go, this isn't for me. Investing is for people that know all the jargon. Mm-hmm. Investing is for people that have been to university and you know really invested in that knowledge. It is a choice to do that. It's a choice to pick up the book, to listen to the podcast, to join the Facebook groups.
Yes.
Any particular avenues you think are worth exploring for a real beginner?
Find someone that you admire who looks like they're doing well and engage them. Take them out, ask them to go out for a coffee. You'd be surprised. You may think people are not interested, but people actually are happy to inform people about steps that they took that got them in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a conversation. Just, hey, you seem to be doing really well with this X business you have. Can I pick your brains a little bit? Don't abuse it and call them every day and message them all the time.
I'm about to buy a coffee. Should I buy a coffee?
And just take free information, especially if they're also offering a service and you find them valuable, use that service. But there are people all around, you know, who are doing things. If I wanted to get into presenting, I would probably send you a message.
You can buy me a coffee anytime, Grace. Free coffee for me. Look at me saving money. You're a superstar, Grace. For anyone that wants to get in touch with you, find out more, whether it's to do with your NGO or indeed your work, what's the best way of reaching out?
Maybe my Instagram handle?
Sure.
So, LMARABE at Instagram.
Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's really been a pleasure.
Since at least 2008, when the US tech journalist Nicholas Carr asked, is Google making us stupid? There has been this sense of crisis around our collective concentration spans. Distraction is everywhere. But are those attention spans actually getting shorter? And crucially, what can we do about it? Dr. Thrai with us today, clinical psychologist from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. Before we talk about general populace and strategies, is this something that you think you might be affected by, Dr. T?
I would definitely say so. I mean, I may at times spend a little bit more than I would like to on social media.
Interesting.
I do enjoy reading, and at times I notice that I put the book down and then just grab my phone for a little
bit. Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I do. I'm in a real book drought at the minute. Nothing has really grabbed me. If anyone's got any good book recommendations, 4001, I would appreciate it. I'm really struggling to have to do some of that, what some people call deep work. And I think there are so many things at play, and we can kind of unpack that. But when is it a problem?
Well, one of the things that I would say when we talk about social media or screen time in general, it becomes problematic when you are neglecting other areas of your life that require some form of attention.
What, like washing yourself or eating or spending time with your family?
Maybe not that extreme in terms of washing yourself and eating, but definitely in terms of spending time with family. Mm-hmm. You'll notice that a lot of families, or even when people go out together, and you can see this when you go out here, you see a lot of people sitting at the same table, but everybody's on their phone. Or you see families together, but the parents aren't really paying attention to their kids because everybody's on some form of screen. Mm-hmm. So this is where it becomes a bit problematic, is where we've taken away from that quality time that we spend with each other, and instead we're kind of just looking at the screen in front of us.
If you are struggling with social media or indeed phone addiction, get in touch. But equally, if you've got any strategies, things are working for you, we'd love to hear from you. We're talking attention span. Now, I'll be completely honest with you. Here's what I struggle with. In front of me, I have got messages coming in on the screen on my left. The screen in front of me, we've got, you know, introductions and people's names. And then on the right, we've got adverts and songs. Then there's the emails. I have got 5 email addresses.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. I've got, yeah. Then I've got, obviously, WhatsApp and then Instagram DMs. By the way, people sending voice notes now on Instagram DMs?
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's the worst.
I'm just really happy that they've added the 1.5x and the 2x feature to it.
Let's just speed that up, please. So I've turned off a lot of notifications. I felt like that was kind of stealing my attention away from what I was doing. But I feel like the volume of information that you know, we've got thrown us right now, it can't have ever been this high.
No, it never was. Actually, there's a lot of research that looks at pre all of this. So 1984.
Oh, the good old days.
The good old days. So if you go back to 1984, actually the amount of people who used to read was double than what we are seeing now. And the population that are reading are only the ones that are much older versus the ones that are younger. So the younger generations, you have Gen Z, Gen A, millennials, a lot more difficult to get them to actually read things. And they'll say it. They'll say, even in sessions, I hear it quite a bit, "Doc, don't give me something to read. Just give me something to watch instead, or listen to rather than actual reading."
But then I found myself doing this with articles as well. You know, if I need to read something for research for the show, or if I'm working on something separately, I've got to really, really buckle down to try and pick out the information, to read an article from start to finish. I find it very, very difficult, which is ridiculous. But I think a lot of people, and you know, you work with students as well. Is this coming up with teens?
Oh, for sure. Not just teens, but even at the university where I teach, it's really difficult to get them to sit for 2 hours in class without reaching for their phones. I mean, I have a hard rule in my class that you're not allowed to touch your phone, but otherwise...
How do you enforce it? Do you get strict?
I do. I tell them I will give them a warning the first and second time their phone becomes mine for a week. So... I get quite strict.
Have you had to follow through on that?
I have, actually. I have had a couple of times that I had to do that. Now, I do actually threaten to sell the phone in Satwa if they are repeat offenders. But I don't actually do that, obviously. But I think what we're struggling with is this idea of just letting go. I mean, Helen, I don't know how you do it, to be honest. I'm looking at you. You have the 3 screens in front of you. And I know you're on your phone. There's a clock. There's just so much. And at the same time, I'm sure you're on your phone a lot when you get home too.
Yeah, my screen time is...
Yes, what is that?
Do you honestly want to know?
I'm a little bit scared for you, but yes.
Okay, so we had an event for ARN a few weeks ago, and that meant that we were, you know, meeting lots of people. We were very, you know, involved, and it was, my screen time went down to about 3 hours per day, and then last week it went up to about 6 hours per day.
Oh, wow.
Don't look at me like that. That's however, what I would say though is I don't use a laptop at home at all. Mm. So if I am working from home, I am reading, replying to emails on my phone, content creation on my phone for social media. I read all of my news through apps and websites on my phone. And listen, of course it's absolute, you know, mindless scrolling on Instagram. Probably, if I'm honest, probably for maybe half an hour to maybe an hour a day. Chloe's just come in to shame me. Her daily average, 4 hours 23.
No, no.
Oh, crikey. Okay, Chloe's total screen time, 8 hours and 47 minutes.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow, Chloe, that's intense.
Can you do more? Check out your screen time on your phone and let us know on 4001. Chloe, I mean, the thing is, I love and I appreciate you. And I know some of that is going to be work, so I'm not going to tell you off.
A lot of it is work, but a lot of it is just me having videos on as background noise when I'm doing other things. Mm. So when I get home, if I'm doing laundry, if I'm cooking, I have my phone sitting there playing videos with like headphones in or something like that. So a lot of that is counted.
And I would, and I think I'm the same. So I listen to podcasts, I listen to music. If I'm working, even if I, so let's say I'm working and maybe I have got a laptop out if I'm writing something, then I will have white noise, or I've recently discovered brown noise. I know. I'll tell you all about it in a minute. Tell us, are you struggling with your screen time or indeed your attention? We've had a message about in teens, is it a sign that there's maybe some bigger issues at play? Natasha's talking about her phone addiction. There is absolutely zero judgment, as you've heard from the numbers knocking around the studio. In fact, both people, Chloe and Dr. T, are currently on their phones. You absolute rats. Sure, she's Googling brown noise. Yeah, whatever. It still counts towards your screen time. Dr. Thuraya, clinical psychologist with us today from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. And we're talking about our ever-decreasing concentration and attention spans. It scares me a little bit, to be honest, Dr. T. If I've got to do what kind of people call deep work. And this happens that, you know, if I'm working on an article or I need to do some, you know, really in-depth research for the show. And what was recommended to me recently was brown noise. You looked at me a few couple of minutes ago as if I was just, I mean, what? You know about white noise.
Yes.
So white noise, super helpful for any new parents out there. It's basically like, it's what your baby likes. It might get you a little bit of sleep. It sounds like a hairdryer or a washing machine, all sorts of different ones. Brown noise is apparently lowers the higher frequency. So it's a bit rougher. So it can be like a roar of a river or strong wind. And apparently it's very good if you suffer from ADHD, improve focus and kind of sleep improvement as well. So should we have a little listen? Chloe has very kindly put some into the system and has even color-coded them. So this is white noise. It's that kind of like background hairdryer kind of feel. I wonder if we can tell the difference. This is brown noise. Find it relaxing, Dr. T?
I find it hard to hear.
Oh,
I think
you?
My hearing is getting bad.
Oh, don't say that.
But actually, in the minimal amount of time that I had in between segments where you were talking about the brown noise and ADHD, my brain is so off right now. Essentially, there's not much research that indicates that that is true. However, a lot of people are seem to say that it seems to be quite helpful. And I would imagine just because by listening to it, because it's a lower frequency, it might just help them feel a little bit calmer, or
yes,
anyone in general, it might help people feel a little bit calmer. But how much it actually relates to aiding in attention, I'm not so sure. The research is not out yet on that.
I think what I find quite useful is it's background. And if I have too much quiet, then I'm like, my brain needs something else to do, and I'm just going to reach for my phone. And if I'm listening to, not that I would listen to a podcast when I'm working, but if I'm listening to music, it might remind me of something, you know, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, must get on with that. We're going to talk about mobile phone addiction after 5:30. We've had a couple of messages, but no name here saying, hi both, when is poor attention span in teens a sign that there might be bigger issues at play? Would you mind speaking to that, Thoreau?
So it's very tricky because especially when we talk about ADHD or ADD in teenagers or children, we always have to look at more than one setting. So you cannot diagnose ADD or ADHD in children if it only occurs, let's say, at home, but at school, they're absolutely fine. They're able to sustain their attention. They're able to focus, sit properly, and so on and so forth. So if you're noticing that that's not occurring well in many areas of their life, then that's something definitely that you might want to look into. Also, though, when it comes to concentration, it's quite tricky because anxiety also affects concentration. Depressive symptoms affect concentration. Hormonal imbalance affects concentration. Diabetes affects concentration.
What?
There's so much that affects concentration and focus. And so to just quickly jump to any type of diagnosis is really incorrect. So the first thing that I always do whenever somebody asks me about attention and focus, I say, first, let's do a medical checkup. Let's do a medical like blood work and full checkup, especially with hormones, especially with blood sugar.
And if you are struggling with your concentration levels, you are far from alone. Recent UK survey end of last year found that around half of adults think their attention span is getting shorter, and loads of teachers saying the same thing is happening with their kids. Adam Brown is the co-director of the Centre for Attention, Learning and Memory in Bonaventure University in New York. He says inattention has reached epidemic levels, but he says there is good news too. It's something we've got the power to reverse. We're going to be talking about some strategies next. I'm throwing brown noise out into the mix. What works for you? It can be apps, of course. And we're going to talk about some social media addiction as well. Dr. Thry with us now, clinical psychologist from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. Popcorn brain. Never heard of that term until very recently, but we are talking about how it relates to our ability to focus, or maybe inability to focus. Do we really think, is popcorn brain a term I need to be worried about, Thryer?
Well, maybe not the term itself, but I think what's happening to us since, you know, we've been using our screens a lot more than ever before, I think we definitely need to be paying a little bit more attention, because what's happening is we're not only affecting our attention span, but it's influencing our sleep, it's influencing how we eat, how mindful we are in general, how able we are to be in the present moment. And at the same time, how we feel about ourselves, because a lot of the times we feel like we are so productive when we're doing so many different things at one time. But in reality, we're not actually helping ourselves build our attention and our focus.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is it like a muscle that needs to be exercised?
Absolutely.
So single tasking, does that need to be prized over multitasking?
Well, I think it's more about continuous tasking. So rather than what we're doing now is we're doing continuous partial tasking. And that happens a lot with social media. So when you watch one thing on social media, it's so short, and then you switch to the next thing, and then you switch to the next thing. Rather than continuously doing one thing at a time, that's really important. So we try to stress this idea of, if you need to take a break, it's fine, but give yourself like at least 20 minutes, 30 minutes of sustained attention before you shift into taking a break or shift into doing something else. But when we're trying to be very productive or feel very productive by doing so many different things at the same time, we're actually lowering our productivity, lowering our efficiency, as well as the quality of the work that we're engaging in.
Do you find it quite hard in clinic if you're sitting with someone for, 45 minutes to an hour to remain engaged in that moment?
For some of my clients, it's very difficult. So a lot of them, especially when it comes to handling difficult emotions, what they'll do is they'll quickly grab their phone, or they'll check their, you know, the Apple watches or the Samsung watches, where you can see things that pop up. Or when they're sitting and they are engaged with me, their watches are actually very distracting, because somebody will call or somebody will send a message. So I ask them to take everything off. I mean, that sounded bad. I ask them to take all of their technological things off and then put them aside and to flip their phones upside down.
But that raises a really interesting point in terms of distracting ourselves from discomfort. And what an effective tool phones are for that.
Right. And that's essentially the idea behind addiction, is that escapism, right? Where we're trying to remove ourselves from anything that we feel that is discomforting and not working through those feelings. So when we grab our phone when we're feeling bored, we don't want to sit without boredom. When we're feeling anxious and we just, you know, grab something that we ended up doing, or we message somebody, or we look at Instagram or TikTok or anything like that, what we're doing is we're moving away from these emotions that and that are discomforting, and we're not learning how to work through them, which is extremely problematic because life is a hodgepodge of difficult emotions.
Can we talk phone addiction? We've had not one but two messages on this. Natasha saying, phone addiction, I'm on mine for hours and hours, don't want to say how many. Not just scrolling, but checking emails, WhatsApp messages, banking, research, buying stuff, watching while I cook, playing games to unwind. Oh, I didn't even mention my Candy Crush addiction earlier. Natasha says, I don't read books anymore. I used to write and paint a lot, but it's as though my creativity is dying and my attention span is dwindling. Help. So that's from Natasha. And then we've had a message on the text line as well. No name on this one, saying, my nanny is addicted to her phone. It's some applications where there's chatting and singing. I've confronted her. She knows I don't like screens around the kids, especially since they're still young. And she completely agrees, is on the same wavelength and understands me. But she'll correct it for a short period and then go back again. I think it's addiction and I don't know what to do. Right. When we're talking about phone addiction, are we classifying it as an addiction as we would do with food or substances or anything clinical?
Absolutely. It really just, it's a behavioral addiction, right? It's we're reaching for something when we're trying to run away from something else. That's one thing. So the why is very important. Why are you going to your phone? I know a lot of people say, you know, my whole life is on my phone, between reaching out to family, between doing my work and so on and so forth. And I understand that, but there still needs to be some form of containment. So yes, our lives nowadays are so different than they were before. And so a lot of our information is going to be through screen time. However, we can create a structure within our life where it's not taking over our life. So one of the things that a lot of people struggle with is that sleep hygiene, getting rid of any kind of screen before going to bed. And sometimes my clients will laugh and they'll be like, you're going to put me through withdrawal here. I can't not be on my phone. Or I use my phone for white noise in order to be able to fall asleep. And I say, well, this is because you're trying to run away from the thoughts that are coming up at night before you go to bed.
Because of your phone.
Because of your phone or because of, you know, anxious thoughts or like things that you need to remind yourself of. That's why journaling is so powerful before going to bed. Reading is so powerful before going to bed.
I need to say a thank you because you recommended a gratitude journal maybe about 6 months ago, and I bought it. It was on Amazon. I think it was on sale. And I have, apart from one day in the last 6 months, been filling it out. And it's so simple. Trust me, I hear myself. I'm like, I am not a gratitude journal type of person. Mm-hmm. I would not put myself in that bracket at all. So, I mean, you explained it really beautifully, but this has kind of been my working experience of it. So, you know, you wake up in the morning and you write three things you're grateful for. Then you write three, you know, today will be great if these, you know, if these three things happen. Then you write a positive affirmation, which is a bit I find really cringe. And I have Googled a few positive affirmations just to see ones that don't make me feel like I want to claw my own eyes out. And then in the evening, you write three things that went well and something that you learned that day. Mm-hmm. I honestly feel like, having done this for a number of months, it's really, really made a difference to my mood. And I hear myself, people of Dubai, trust me, I know it can feel a bit other and a bit woo, but it does something in your brain.
It really does. And it not only puts you in quite a meditative state, and it helps you be more mindful and in the present moment. But I'm just like you, Helen. I am extremely cringing when I talk about these things, and I don't like the extreme positivity. I'm not that type of person. However, with this particular book, because it has specific prompts and because it also looks at what are you learning, as in what needs to change? What are the things that you want to do with your life? So it's not just about kind of experiencing the moment, but it's also about looking towards the future in a much more positive manner.
If you want, I'll find it now, right this very second. If you want the link, just send me the word book. But as I said, I find it really useful, and there's a kids version as well. So it's a really, really nice one. Dr. Thryer with us. We're going to turn back to a bit of phone addiction chat in just a few minutes. Some other strategies, tools you can put in place. Message here saying, this resonates. Perfect storm of baby brain, then pandemic, and now perimenopause over here. Nightmare. You are not alone, Anonymous. Joining us in studio, we've got Dr. Thuraya, clinical psychologist from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. And I've just spent the last few minutes replying to your messages. We're just talking about the 5-minute gratitude journal that Thuraya recommended to me at the end of last year. And it has been, honestly, a really, really fantastic practice. Just, and it is literally even less than 5 minutes. Morning and evening, you start off by saying, I am grateful for what would make today great, a daily affirmation. And at night, it's 3 amazing things that happened today. And then, what did I learn today? If you want that link, just send me the word book and I will send it your way. We are talking about phone addiction. We had a message earlier talking about their nanny being addicted to the phone, which I think is a tricky one, to be honest, Thuraya, because we think about the, you know, phones at work. I mean, no boss wants to think of their employee being distracted, and especially when there's kind of kids at play. But, you know, someone's at home, they might not be actively working with, you know, home or kids all the time. What would you recommend, and I'm certainly not saying this needs to be the case for this listener and their nanny, but for, in terms of putting some guidelines in place with yourself and your favourite word?
Boundaries.
For phone addiction in particular. And I'm genuinely asking for me as well, because it's something that I've been thinking about a lot. I'm getting home and I'm trying to leave my phone in my handbag between getting home at, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock and when the kids go to bed. It's really hard.
It is. I mean, I find myself doing it sometimes as well when I'm at work. I mean, obviously not in my sessions, but when I do leave the sessions and I sit at my desk, I'm already in front of the computer, but now I'm still looking at my phone. I think one thing that you want to do is recognize that you really need to start single tasking. Move away from, you know, if you're on your computer and you're answering emails, put the phone away, put it someplace a little bit further. So if you actually have to look at it, you have to get up to get to it. So the further the phone is away from you, the better it is for you to be able to kind of like push that kind of addiction away. Now, at the same time, it's important to recognize why. Why am I reaching for my phone at this particular moment? I just opened this email and I need to reply, but I just grabbed my phone. Sometimes it's because we don't want to tackle this email or the person behind the email is very frustrating, or the email itself requires a lot of work. So now we're feeling discomforted. So let me grab my phone instead. So now I'm procrastinating. Now I'm moving away from it. So by being able to identify what my triggers are in order to grab onto any kind of screen to distract me, this can be very helpful to moving away from it. That takes a little bit of time, so you have to be really patient and very compassionate with yourself in the beginning.
I also think it's really key, and I say this like from my point of view, about how you're using your phone. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm sitting reading an article and scrolling, that's very different to me watching Instagram Reels for the same amount of time.
Right.
Like different things are happening in my brain, for sure. Can we talk about dopamine?
Yes, of course. So, and dopamine is a major factor when it comes to social media addiction as well, because every time you either get a like, a notification, somebody, you know, sends you a message, or if you're seeing something that's making you laugh, cat videos, whatever it is, you're getting one of those dopamine hits, right? And that's part of our pleasure-seeking behavior. Now, with a lot of that and consistently, especially with the way social media is created, it's done on purpose that you keep getting these dopamine hits over.
Show me the bunnies.
Exactly. Exactly. Over and over and over again, you keep getting these dopamine hits. And so when we are trying to move into something like reading, there is no dopamine hit there. Or you might have to wait much longer or a few chapters before you get to that dopamine hit where there's like a climax in the story or something like that. So essentially, you want to retrain your brain. So everything that you're doing with your brain, you're training it to do something and you're creating strong neural pathways. However, when we're trying to retrain or recondition ourselves, we have to change the way that we engage with certain things. And that change, repeated over time with consistency, can create new neural pathways and breaks old ones.
There is hope, guys. There is hope. Message here saying, I guess less socializing people can get addicted to phones. I don't think it's that straightforward necessarily. I think everyone has kind of, you know, the potential.
Right, of course. Absolutely.
Seek connection, seek the dopamine. And the more we get it, the more we need it. Dr. Thuraya, thank you so much for your time as ever. Massively appreciate it. You can find Dr. Thuraya at the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.